Hello, everyone. Before we start our preview card episode today, there's been kind of a big announcement, and then we wanted to address it really quick.
Yeah, new rules specifically for Companion. This was announced on June 1st, and it says, for the Companion cards, we've talked about these before, Lutrie being the main one we talked about, but it says, once per game, anytime you could cast a sorcery during your main phase when the stack is empty, you can pay 3 generic mana to put your Companion from your sideboard into your hand. This is a special action, not an activated ability.
So this is an official rules change by Wizards of the Coast. They do this very rarely, but basically changing how Companion works now. You can't just play the Companion from what we've been calling the companion zone. As if it were like a card in your hand or whatever. You now have to pay 3 mana at sorcery speed to put it into your hand, and now then you'll have to pay the casting cost of the Companion to now cast it. So this is a definite nerf to Companions. Some of people have been asking, does this rule change affect Commander? And in fact, it does, because it's official errata to the card. So I'll read the statement from the Commander Rules Committee here. This was posted by Sheldon Menery. It says, you've seen the changes to Companion. As far as Commander goes, we find no additional changes necessary before our next regular update, which is scheduled on June 22nd. Companion will operate in Commander similarly to other formats, meaning you'll have to pay the 3, etc., save that it will not come from a sideboard.
Right.
Let's leave the sideboard debate behind, because we've already talked about it before.
Yeah.
What do you think of this change, Jimmy?
I mean, for us, we didn't really get much time to play with the Companions to know how powerful they were, but they clearly were terrorizing other formats. And so in that, I understand where they're coming from. It's tough because in the past, we've seen Commander follows the official Magic rules when it comes to the Mulligan and all this stuff as well, which I think is good. So this is just another example of that, minus the little gaffe with the sideboard wording. But, you know, still no sideboard in Commander. We're not talking about that today, though. No thanks.
And we mentioned we're not talking about it. I think this is a little bit, it was probably not necessary for Commander. It was clearly necessary for
Legacy,
Vintage,
Modern, yeah. Those.
It's a clear nerf, makes Companions less powerful. We already thought they weren't super powerful because you still have to meet the deck building restriction in order to pay the 3 mana and put it into your hand. It also makes them not just cost more mana, but also they're disruptible, right? So you do that sorcery speed.
Yeah.
So somebody can Duress, Thoughtseize, whatever. Duress obviously doesn't work. It's not a creature. But you know what I'm saying. It could be affected in other ways that from the Companion Zone, which is not an official thing.
Well, it's
but
just
we're
sort of sitting in the ether. But now it's in someone's hand. There is a way, for instance, if you could instant speed affect their hand at some way, now you can actually work around that. So it's a special action. Other special actions in the past have been something like Morph. But in this case, this special action is just you are placing this card from outside the game into your hand. It costs a certain amount of mana. You can only do it at sorcery speed. It's very readable. Everyone knows it's coming. I think that was a big thing too, right? Now you can counter it on the way down. If you're playing against it, you know.
Well, you could counter it even from the Companion Zone.
Yeah, but in general, like, Lutrie was a tough one because it has Flash, and, well, I guess, you know what? This really just taxes the use of the Companion so that it's not instantly available for very cheap every single time.
It's interesting that you mention Lutrie, because I think the next question a lot of Commander players are asking is, does this change mean that Lutrie is now fine and can be unbanned?
Nope. Lutrie has the exact same problem as it has before, and now you're just paying 3 extra mana for it. But it's the same thing. Every single blue-red deck or deck that has blue-red has zero reason to not play the card, thus creating an extreme imbalance just because that card is evergreen and vanilla and can fit into any deck. Not vanilla, but you know what I mean. That has blue and red.
It doesn't change the reasons that Lutrie was banned, which is the fact that anything with red and blue in it just at zero cost has access to this card. Whether that card is super powerful or not is... It doesn't really matter at all. Mm-hmm. It's just they have a thing that the other color combinations don't have because the deck building restriction in Commander is nil. It's nothing.
Yeah, so, it's exactly what Lutrie says on the text box.
So
unless you're going like Shadowborn Apostles.
Right, which doesn't have blue and red anyway.
There you go.
But so I don't foresee the Rules Committee. I have no inside knowledge. We haven't had our meeting about any of this stuff yet. But I personally don't foresee it changing. I think Lutrie will remain banned, probably.
And the last question probably is, Companion now just awful? Or is it just slightly worse than before? 3 mana is no joke. I think Companion was already a little overvalued. And I'm sorry for everyone that went and built an entire Commander deck to have a Companion there. You're still going to have that Companion. It's just going to cost you pretty much what feels like Commander tax to get it into play.
One time, too, because you can't do it over and over.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this pretty much guarantees that in a year, 18 months, 2 years from now, we just basically don't see companions.
Yeah, there might be some occasional deck that has an Obosh in there, you know, but it's very specific. But in general, probably not.
Yeah, so it definitely nerfs them. I think they're a lot worse. Probably some of them are still okay to play. It's not going to hurt you too much.
It still doesn't change them being in the deck or as your commander or any of those things. It's just the companion mechanic. And again, this is heavily enforced because of how broken it got in other formats, which maybe goes to say that it could get there eventually with Commander 2. Who knows? In this case, Wizards decide to nip it in the bud and... I guess to the wishes of many players, just make it much harder instead of banning it outright.
All right. One last question. What do you think about Wizards making this type of change? I mean, it's something we've never seen them do for as long as we've been making content.
Yeah, it's very crazy. I mean, this is sort of the risk you play when you put crazy new mechanics out there. And I know there's a lot of controversy about all of it, but to be honest, I'm just happy that these things can be changed in physical card games, because it is very hard, right, to errata a card, but there are ways around it of doing that are a little less destructive, and this is one of them.
Yeah, I think it's fine. If this is happening at this rate, which is like something like this happens every decade, it's not the biggest deal.
If this
was happening every year, sure, we could start to get worried about it, but it's clearly that hasn't been the case, and I doubt it will be moving forward. So
yeah.
All right, that's all we're going to discuss about this companion change. We'll have the links to these articles and stuff in the show notes. Would like to hear what everybody out there thinks about it. Go ahead and respond in the comments or tweet at us, email us, et cetera. Yeah, now let's move on to the full episode here where we're going to talk about our M21 preview card.
And we sing.
Yeah, do we?
Maybe not.
I don't think we do because it's a preview card episode.
I was just teasing you.
Lies.
Yeah, here's the episode.
We sing a lot of times, not this time.
Yeah. Okay, see you soon.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. We got a special one today, a quick bonus episode for our exclusive preview card from M21.
That was the bonus.
We also leveled up while we were doing that.
Well, bonus, you know, you win, we win, we get a new card, all good things all around. M21 is right around the corner. You're going to start seeing card previews pop up everywhere from some of your favorite creators around the net, as well as a bunch of random news sources and stuff. I'm always excited to see where cards pop up, but we have a fun one.
Yeah, so also, if you want to get a hold of the cards that you're seeing, you can probably pre-order right now, or you will be able to very soon. Obviously, we want you to use our affiliate link, which is cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You know, you're going to get these cards anyway. If you just use the affiliate link, when you do, you really are supporting this podcast, our whole channel, game nights, everything we do.
Yeah, much appreciated. And of course, Ultra Pro, another awesome sponsor of the show. They have relic tokens. They have their own special dice. They have deck boxes and sleeves, everything that you want to customize your play experience. Ultra Pro's got you covered. And with new sets, that always means awesome new play mats and things on the way. So Josh and I put all of our awesome cards into Ultra Pro sleeves. We trust them to keep our stuff safe, especially with a cool card like the one we have coming up today.
Yeah, that's true. And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. There's all kinds of different perks at the different reward tiers. You can interact with Jimmy and myself every single day on our Discord server. You get to watch game nights earlier than the general public. We really do appreciate everybody that supports us through our Patreon. They really have gotten us through these recent tough times. So thank you so much. And another way we thank them is by shouting out one lucky patron every single episode.
Woo.
And this episode is dedicated to Phil Wong.
Phil, you rock.
I was going to let you say it. Any relation?
No relation. And it's
it was bound to happen with your last name eventually. It's never going to happen.
How many Lee Kwais are you going to meet?
There's like seven.
Seven. Wong is the second most common last name in in the language. So, and a quick reminder for those of you that are going to be sending in videos to the 2020 Commander Summit. We posted about it. It's going to be on our Twitter, as well as the link to basically explain all the details. The deadline is coming up. It's June 12th.
Yeah, so make sure if you're a content creator or a commander luminaire and you want to participate in the summit this year, get your video submissions in. We'll have a link in the show notes for details on how to submit.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about our preview card. The reason everybody's here.
Woohoo!
It is a splashy, colorless, mythic rare from M21.
Yeah.
You want to read it, Jimmy?
Yeah, well, you can definitely splash different things with this because of the text. It is called Chromatic Orrery.
Oh, it's an Orrery.
Ooh, it's 7 mana for a legendary artifact. It's mythic. And it says, you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color.
So similar to Chromatic Lantern.
But it's any mana.
Right.
Because you can tap this guy and add 5 colorless mana. So it's a 7-mana rock that taps to add 5. You can also pay 5 generic mana and tap this card. And it says draw a card for each color among permanents you control. So that's up to 5 there, right? So it could be 5 mana, tap, draw 5. Yeah, the spending mana as though it were of any color, really interesting. It is very similar to Chromatic Lantern, which
it's
is
better
the
even,
name.
Right?
Yeah, it's definitely better because that just adds it to your lands.
This adds it for any mana. It doesn't care where it came from.
Yeah. In fact, your signets now are no longer restricted to the 2 colors they make. Your mind stones can tap for any color as well.
Ashnod's Altar, that can be spent on anything. Stuff like that. That's pretty crazy. Filtering mana to any color from anywhere. We don't see that a lot of Magic. That's pretty powerful. But this card's pretty straightforward, right? It feels like it.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of text on it, and a lot of it does seem pretty cool, but what you're looking at essentially is a 7-mana Chromatic Lantern-esque rock that if you want to use it to draw you cards is great, but I feel like that's not, if you're playing a 5-color deck to begin with, right, and the max you're drawing is 5, you're probably going to find better ways to draw cards in that deck.
Well, yeah, I would look at this card and I would say it actually kind of costs you 10 mana to draw the cards, right? Because you have to tap the Orrery.
Right.
So that's 5 mana from the Orrery you're not going to get. And you have to put 5 more mana into it. So 10 mana draw, and in the best case scenario, it's 5 cards, right? You have to have your permanents on the battlefield have to have 5 colors for you to get all 5.
Right.
So oftentimes you're not even going to get all 5. So 10 mana to draw less than 10 mana to draw 5 is not great, but 10 mana to draw less than 5 is pretty bad.
You're
almost never going to want to do that.
Feels like a parachute you hit. If you have nothing else to do and you're like, well, I can't use the mana from this. It doesn't matter that I can change mana to any color, but I could use a couple of cards to draw. It does suck that you can't tap this to pay for the cost. There are other cards out there that do that for you.
It's true.
I just think of one Urza, but yeah.
I mean, one thing in favor of the card draw is a lot of times when you have a lot of mana, the one thing you do want is cards, and so this will kind of fill both roles. I mean, it is card draw and ramp, the two things we think are generally the most important thing in decks. So, well, let's talk about some cool synergies and combos we see with this card right at the bat. The first thing I thought of was just like being able to untap it a bunch of times.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen the power of untapping Gilded Lotuses, and that's 3 mana of any one color. This is 5 mana of any combination of colors.
Yeah, so 5 is more than 3.
Yes,
that's math. So the usual suspects, Cure's Follower, Fate Stitcher, Fetal Alchemist, they will all give you a big mana advantage from being able to untap this. So if you have cards like that already in your deck, the Chromatic Orrery becomes something you would at least think about putting in, I would think. Yep. I would want multiple of this effect. I wouldn't want just like, I have one Effeto Alchemist in my entire deck. That doesn't mean put in Chromatic Orrery. But if you have if you have a few of those, I think you would think about it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like normally in these types of decks, if you're playing untap abilities, you have a lot of other creatures that can do things when they untap, but you want a bunch of mana rocks to do the same thing. So you're going to be running probably a Gilded Lotus in a deck like this anyway, just because if you don't draw the Chromatic Orrery, or it's a 7-mana artifact, you can't play it right away, you can still get value out of smaller rocks.
Now, the fact that it taps for 5, that's a lot. We don't see many rocks or anything that taps for that amount of mana all at once. That opens up a card like Filigree Sages as a good combo. That's 3 and a blue for a 2/3 artifact creature of Vidalcan Wizard, but it says you can pay 2 and a blue, colon, untap target artifact. So it immediately goes infinite on mana with Chromatic Orrery because you pay the 5, or you tap it, get 5, you pay 3 of it to untap it, you're still floating 2. Infinite mana also means infinite card draw with Chromatic Orrery.
Right.
So that's one thing I'll say about Chromatic Orrery. A lot of infinite mana combos, they need another piece in order to give you something to do with that mana to convert it into a win, whereas the Orrery basically does that because it also gives you the card draw.
Yeah, you're going to create infinite mana, draw a bunch of cards, and it'll always keep untapping. And what's kind of neat here is oftentimes it's like, oh, cool, you did the Grim Monolith, whatever. You got a bunch of infinite colorless mana. What are you going to do with it? But because of the way the Chromatic Orrery is phrased, you can spend mana as though it were mana of any color. So you can put the mana in your mana pool. You don't need even to decide beforehand what you're going to transform it into if you're trying to filter it. And then you can spend it willy-nilly.
That's a really good point. A couple of other cards that come to mind that are commanders. One of them is commander. Teferi Temporal Archmage, which is the mono blue planeswalker that can be your commander. Untaps up to 4 permanents.
This is a pretty good one to untap.
Yep. Tezzeret the Seeker is just a planeswalker, can't be your commander, but also untaps and tutors for artifacts. Those are two things that if they're in your deck, Chromatic Orrery maybe finds a slot. A couple other commanders we don't see as much.
Yeah, actually, I haven't seen this played ever now that I think about it, but it's Taunos, Urza's apprentice for blue and a red. This is sort of like the Is It Artificer type. It's a 1/3 with haste, and you can pay blue and a red and then tap Taunos to copy target activated or triggered ability you control from an artifact source, and then you can choose new targets for the copy. So that means you can either draw twice off of this to double this last effect, or you can just add 10 mana.
Yeah, it'll cost you two of it, so add seven.
Let's add seven, yeah.
Seven's a lot. That's how much it costs, but yeah.
This is interesting. I mean, Chromatic Orb by itself, right, lands for seven. You can get five of it back immediately, so it's not the worst turn.
That's actually, we didn't talk about that, right? Yeah. Like, on turn seven, you get a five mana rebate, so it basically only costs you two. I wouldn't equate that to the same as being two mana, though, because you cannot play it on turn two, three, four, you know, unless you've ramped a ton by four. But that is a good point we didn't mention.
Interesting.
Kirkesh Onaki Ancient is another commander that...
From N15, this is my first core set.
Yeah.
the core set synergies here.
So Kirkesh doubles up activations. Now, you can't double up the mana ability through Kirkesh. You have to only... But you could do the card draw. The problem with Taunos, I think, in Kirkesh, and even Teferi, is that they are either mono or dual-colored commanders. So if they're your commander, you're not going to be able to tap and draw very many cards. Like, I guess, would you ever run this card in a deck? Like, how many colors do you need in the deck to sort of want to run this card?
Probably minimum three, just so you can feel good about the spending mana if it was mana of any color, right? This is, in a way, mana fixing. It's a seven mana way to get there, but if you got a lot of ramp and you can get this out as early as turn five, maybe even turn four, I could see it doing a lot of work in that world. But yeah, monocolor decks don't really care too much.
Yeah, not at all. I don't even think duo, like, it's just not worth it because you're...
Five mana draw two cards?
Yeah. Well, it's actually like...
Don't worry, ten mana
draw two cards, and then plus the two or seven that you initially put in.
Yeah. At that point, divination is actually just better.
A lot better, yeah. One more combo... It's obvious with cards like these, but we'll mention it, is the dramatic reversal Isochron Scepter combo, which allows you to basically untap all your non-lands over and over. So with Chromatic Orrery, this will cause you to gain infinite mana, draw infinite cards again.
Throw it on the list of the many things.
Yeah, congrats. We broke Dramatic Scepter. We did it.
Chromatic Reversal, one of the worst cards ever until you combine it with Isochron Scepter.
So let's talk about, because the fact that this is 7 CMC, I think, is the big hiccup, right?
Yeah.
So immediately you kind of want to cheat it into play, right?
I would think so. I mean, again, 7 CMC, that's a tall order, right? At that point, you could be playing what are akin to Game Enders.
Right. So maybe we can figure out ways to get this into play for less than 7 mana, though.
Yeah,
and then it becomes a lot better.
Yes, and this is sort of the typical how you cheat big things out, the reanimator-esque abilities of a lot of cards recently. The first up is actually a much older card. It's Arkham Dagson, who's sort of like a fan-favorite commander, but again, it's monocolored. But 3 in the blue for a 2/2. If you can cheat it out, maybe it doesn't matter. You can tap and then target artifact creature's controller sacrifices it. That player may search his or her library for a non-creature artifact card, put it into play, then shuffle his or her library.
So you can sacrifice a servo or something, go get a Chromatic Orrery, and it'll immediately give you 5 mana, and Arkham Dagson's ability costs no mana to do. So it kind of gives you 5 mana right then. You're right. It'll never tap for more than one card draw in this deck, but I think you'd be doing it for the mana.
That's huge ramp, and especially if you can get Arkham out on turn 2, then you can use him by turn 3. But that requires a soul ring. But, you know, hey.
Here's a favorite of yours.
Yay, the Goblin Welder. This one typically tends to end with a lot of people going, wait, it can do it to my graveyard too? Yeah. So it's a Goblin Artificer. It's a 1/1. You can tap it to choose target artifact a player controls and target artifact card in that player's graveyard. If both targets are still legal as this ability resolves, that player simultaneously sacrifices the artifact and returns the artifact card to the graveyard. So kind of similar to Arkham, but it looks at graveyards instead and can target any player. So Craig has a Blightsteel out. You can use the Goblin Well to replace that with a random Signet that got blown up earlier. But
for yourself, you can sack a treasure token and bring out Chromatic Orrery from your graveyard if you've dumped it in there somehow. You can do this pretty early on in the game, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, and red has tons of ways to get stuff into the graveyard, including this next guy.
Yeah, so Duretti, Scrap Savant, another monocolored commander, but it's the mono-red sort of artifact commander. And it's a planeswalker, but the ability that sort of is the most germane to the discussion is the negative ability, which has sacrificed an artifact if you do return target artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this is another basically Goblin Welder ability. And Duretti's often trying to get a bunch of stuff in the graveyard through various means. And so Maybe Chromatic Orrery sort of fits in there. I don't know if it's good enough. I'm just saying those are the types of things you might want to try with this card.
Yeah. Now, this is a card that can go... This next one is a card that can go into a lot of decks. I have this in my Brea deck, which Chromatic Orrery might find a good place in, because four-color decks and building mana bases for that
came... Cares about artifacts?
Yeah, yeah. So, Master Transmuter is 3 in the blue for a 1/2 artifact creature, human artificer. You can pay a blue and tap the Transmuter to return an artifact you control to its owner's hand. You may put an artifact card from your hand onto the battlefield. So what's funny is that you can actually return the same artifact that you bounced to your hand and put onto the battlefield.
To get ETBs again?
ETBs, or even just to get it untapped again, right? You could have the Chromatic Orrery out, tap it, and then use the Transmuter to bounce it and then put it back out untapped.
The Chromatic Orrery seems really good with this, because one mana, you get it out, you immediately gain 4 mana on this exchange, and you have a really powerful artifact in play from then on.
Yeah, and if you're building around artifacts, you are going to find things that want to leave the battlefield and come into the battlefield.
And the last one we're going to talk about here that kind of could cheat this into play, there's more cards, but we're not going to mention them all.
We're the heavy hitters.
Kuldotha Forgemaster, 5 mana for an artifact creature. It's a 3/5, but you tap it and sacrifice 3 artifacts, and then search your library for an artifact card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So this is a way to, again, cheat it into play.
This is also one of those immediately remove it on-site cards, which sort of brings us to the next point. If you're going to be playing all these crazy cards that can cheat artifacts out, I mean,
why did you get Blightsteel? Yeah, why didn't you get like something that's like, instead of getting another piece that's gonna allow you to cast
another big thing?
Not just cut out the middleman and just go straight to the big scary thing to cheat out?
Yeah, so it's interesting because, you know, Chromatic Orrery now is kind of looking more like a card that is just ramp more than anything else, or like occasional card draw and mana fixing. It's not so much game ending, and all the cards we talked about are typically ones that people use to accelerate into a game ending plan, if not just outright win the game. Kuldotha Forgemaster is just a card that says, I'm going to win if you don't get rid of me.
So our next thought when looking at the card was like, well, what if we could copy it a bunch of times? And then, oh, wait, it's a legendary artifact. So, yeah, all that cool copy shenanigans are out the window. So you can't, like, play it, copy it 5 times, and now you got a bajillion mana and a million ways to draw cards, and that kind of accelerates you towards a win. I have no idea why a Chromatic Orrery is legendary. Like, there's nothing about that that seems to imply that it's legendary.
I think the art might imply that, you know, a lot of people come to the Museum of Science or whatever, and they look at this one that exists, and they're like, well, it's clearly legendary. There's only one. So maybe it was one of those.
Come to think of it, why is it an orrery?
I don't know. In fact, in the many years of saying the word orrery, misspelling it, I don't actually really know what an orrery is. I should look that up.
It's clearly some sort of thing with all these circles, you know, those solar... Yeah. Because all of them have
rotating
all the
around each
rotating
other.
Circle thing. Yeah. So
they look cool. Something that looks cool.
Well, if we don't know what it is, then I guess this could be that. Yeah. So evidently, that's why it's an orrery. All right, let's talk about the fact that we mentioned it earlier, you can spend mana as though it were mana of any color. Mm-hmm. So the fixing, I think you want to put this in decks where you really do need that fixing.
Yeah.
So something like your favorite, or used to be your favorite and isn't anymore, Send Triplets.
Careful with the words we say in this show these days.
Thought it might be your favorite?
Thought it might be my favorite, was always interested in building and quickly decided against it. But yeah, Send Triplets, that is a 3-color deck that, you know, you want to put every version of card in there that allows you to tap for other colors of mana so you can steal your opponent's cards.
Yep.
Chromatic Orrery obviously gets that done. And I think it's actually pretty good in Send Triplets because of the amount of times the card's getting removed. You want to be able to recast it again, and having a big mana rock out there, this pays up to 2 recasts of commander abilities.
Or it just says you can cast all the spells out of everybody's hands. You don't need anything else.
Yeah, you don't need to worry about it. You can tap all of your weird lands and they'll do it for you.
And also, Send Triplets is likely to have all 5 colors in play because you can steal the cards from the decks of the colors you aren't.
Yeah.
So it'll actually, the draw cards will work. I think 5-color commanders like Sissei, Weatherlight, Captain, especially if they have a 5-color Wooburg activation ability, which Sissei does. She's a 2 and a white for a 2/2 and gets +1/+1 for each color among other legendary permanents you control. But you can pay Wooburg and then search your library for a legendary permanent card with converted mana cost less than Sissei's power and put that card onto the battlefield. So Chromatic Orrery pays just straight away for that part of Sissei. Also, it's a legendary permanent for a +1/+1 on Sissei.
But it doesn't have a color. It's each color amongst other legendary permanents.
Oh.
So it's similar text as the Chromatic Orrery, but Actually, that's an interesting point, though, because had they put any mana symbols in the Chromatic Orrery, then it would be limited to those color decks. So this is one of those weird cards like Chromatic Lantern where you can put it into any color deck and it still works because it doesn't have any pips in it.
That's interesting. Yeah, they could have like accidentally made it so it didn't work in Temur decks or something. Yeah.
Horde of Notions, another old favorite. We haven't talked about that one in a while. Costs Ubrig to play and has Vigilance, Trample, and Haste with our 5/5, but you can pay Ubrig and you can play target elemental card from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. So again, that's just one tap of the Orrery there because you can spend mana as though it were mana of any color.
Okay, I want to pause. Are you saying Ubrig like facetiously because white is not a real color?
Ubrig. Good call.
You're just cutting white out because you know, you're like, white's not a real color anymore because it's so underpowered.
But this can tap for it, so maybe I should say Ubrig. I kind of liked Ubrig. It was like the French version of saying it. Because you know how they drop out all the letters. If a word has ER at the end, they just don't say it. They say A. Yeah. You know. So in this case, Ubrig. Ubrig.
All right. So
hamburger.
I sort of think I wouldn't run Chromatic Orrery in even a three color deck. I think it's got to be four or more. I just think,
for the draw card thing and all.
Because
that,
the draw card is not that good, and if I don't need the fixing, then just a 7-mana rock that taps for 5, like 7 CMC. Is so much mana.
It's a lot. You want to put your heavy hitters there. That's what I thought when I saw this card. There's a reason why the best ramp is 1, 2, 3 mana.
Yep.
And occasionally higher.
Okay, don't look at the outline because I wrote it down there. I did a quick, it's not scientific, but I did a quick survey looking through the tapped out list for all the decks we've played on game nights over the last few years, just to see, on average, how many cards of 7 CMC or more our decks have? Like, how many slots do we even have for a 7-mana-plus card? How many do you think the average deck on game nights has?
I've built a few decks recently. My budget Paco and Haldun deck, by the way, tops out at 5.
Yeah, I think it has, like, one card that's 7 or above.
I think probably 4 to 5. My decks, I might lean a little heavier on the top side because I do play a lot of reanimator decks. I don't?
No, it's about 3 to 4, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Between 3 and 4 is the average. Now, that's weighted because there's like a Braids deck you played that had like 13, obviously.
Right. But there's 8 CMC spells that don't count for the 7 slot.
No, it counts 7 or above.
Oh, or above?
I'm
3 or 4?
7 or above.
Wow.
Yeah, our decks on game nights generally have, and this is not just us, this is guests and everything, 3 to 4 slots. On average, that are 7 CMC or above.
So that's pretty important slot then if you're only dedicating 3 to 4 cards to it, right?
Right, exactly. Let's talk about some of the popular 7-mana cards in EDH. I'm just going to list them. Avenger of Zendikar, Zendikar Resurgent, Mind's Dilation, Elishnorn, Approach of the Second Sun, Nexus of Fate, Shieldred, Whispering One, Cyclonic Rift. I know it's 2 CMC, but you cast it for 7 most of the time. The new Ultimatum cards, Eerie Ultimatum and Ruinous Ultimatum. That's the get everything from your graveyard.
All permanents back, yeah.
And then destroy all non-land permanents you don't control. Those cards are powerhouse cards. Chromatic Orrery, do you think that it fits in on that list I just read?
That's a big NO.
Yeah.
Elishnorn will sometimes come down, and the reason we talk about it so much, and probably the reason we won't talk about Chromatic Orrery as much, is that one card tends to win you the game like a much higher percentage of the time.
At least threaten to immediately win when you untap, right?
Yeah, and or if not, a full board wipe.
Yeah.
Or if not, just massive inconvenience for everyone else. Chromatic Orrery seems to be in the balance of the world where it's like big, fun, splashy stuff that people aren't going to necessarily be afraid of.
Yeah. I think this is a card where it's just very mediocre. Chromatic Orrery, I mean, like you can put it in any deck that's 3 color or more and it won't be like embarrassing, but I don't think very many optimized versions of those decks will want Chromatic Orrery. I think they'll be weakened by having that instead of another one of these powerful 7 cards. Yeah.
Well, my question was like, is it worth it only if you're going to be able to get that instant win with it and draw your whole deck?
Yeah, is it only a combo piece?
Yeah.
And then at 7 mana, do you want a combo piece of 7 mana, or do you want just a lot easier one like Basalt Monolith, Rings of Brighthearth? Those are both way cheaper.
Yeah, and then I also asked a question like, would you rather build a deck that just has 2-drop, 3-drop, 5-drop mana ramp cards and ending with like 1 Gyarados at most?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you do a deck that has all of them all the way up to Chromatic Orrery, or would you build a deck that kind of only has the top end of ramp? And in general, I think you're always trending towards the lower end.
I mean, think about Thran Dynamo. That's a card I don't know about you, but I used to run a lot.
Yeah.
And I run less and less of it these days because I don't really generally want to be ramping at 4. There's enough 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I get to turn 4 or 4 mana, you know, I usually have 5, 6 by that point because of the little ramp that I've done. And I want to actually be playing spells that now affect the game rather than playing spells that give me more mana to play bigger spells later.
Yeah, and at that point too, I think four is one of those really interesting drop slots for EDH, because you do get the Jaredis and Master Transmuters. Like that's when I think you really start the keys to the engine. You don't want to just keep ramping.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're doing the thing that we kind of talk a lot about these days, which is just spinning your wheels.
Yeah, not getting towards, not trying to bring the game towards a completion. Again, I think this card, it's very rarely going to be horrible, but it's also tough to make it awesome. I mean, there are some combo reasons, but besides that,
yeah,
I'm just kind of meh on the card.
Something I thought about too, which is you play this for 7, you are going to get 5 back, right? It's like, yep. Oh, okay, that's sort of the value of having these cards. And then I was like, compare this to Rishkar's Expertise, where you pay 6 to draw a bunch of cards and you can play a card that's a 5 drop or less for free. So it's essentially kind of the same, because you're not thinking about future turns here, but you get to draw the cards, you get to put out more cards that you draw from it. Chromatic Orrery doesn't really give you that explosiveness, and it costs even more.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you have to have some setup, right? You need a creature in play, and yeah. Okay.
I mean, you need a lot of setup to get a Chromatic Orrery out.
That's true.
7 either, too.
That's a good point. All right. That's going to do it for our preview card video. Again, this was a short episode, but we are going to be coming at you next week with our usual content. I'm sure we'll have the M21 set review coming up now that the previews are out.
As well.
Get out there, check out the other content creators and what they're previewing, because I'm sure they have some cool stuff as well.
And we'd love to know if you have a cool use for the Orrery that we did not think about, or maybe some historical definitions of Orrery that we did not discuss either. Feel free to leave in the comments below, or you can tweet at us, find us on Instagram or Facebook.
It's just 50 comments that are the link to the wiki page for Orrery.
That's what I would do. My answer is, I was like, have you tried Googling the question you just asked me? Because I would like to answer it, but I'm pretty sure Google is going to do the better version.
All right. Big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Lady Danger, Ashlyn Rose, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, and Sam Waldo.
And a big thanks, as always, to Jeffrey Palmer, who provides the living card animations behind us here on set, on game nights, as well as starting and stopping our videos at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, which means it's about to happen very soon, because you can find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG on Twitter.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Peace. Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.